Like, what the hell, man? Like, how does this administration keep getting away with outright golden showering our faces and telling us that it's a spritzel? First time, long time, welcome. I'm Smitty. We got Roan. We got Booze behind the booth. And Roan, you know what? Some NFL teams, management, coaches, they evaluate potential NFL draft picks by game tape or statistics or, you know, just genuine talent. Nick Sirianni, though, he's going the rock, paper, scissors via Zoom route. What do you think about that?
I hope to God that we're being trolled. I hope that there's some kind of puppet mastery going on where Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman are like, let's control what the media talks about and say the absolute dumbest bullshit that we can on that podium so we can throw them their fucking food and they can all, the guard dogs can chop on the steak and we can waltz in and do some stupid shit. I pray to God that that's not what Nick Sirianni's real coaching methodology, his tactics, his way of evaluating, not just NFL players, but people. I really hope to God, Smitty, that it's not through rock, paper, scissors.
You know what? The first thing about Nick Sirianni is Booze described it perfectly in the pregame. Booze, you want to say what we were correlating?
He's like a seven-year-old kid who just snorted 13 pixie sticks.
Yeah, and just watches game tape 24/7, which I don't hate Nick Sirianni. In fact, he's kind of like becoming endearing to me.
Me
he's
too.
He's like a puppy dog out there. He's just overly excited. Now, would I rather have the well-trained dog doing the real life jobs while the puppy's shitting all over the kitchen that isn't even housebroken yet? Yeah, of course. But, you know, he's cute. He's cute out there. Do they need to get him like an actual PR team to not say fucking stuff like, hey, I'm evaluating guys on rock, paper, scissors and competitiveness? Probably. But it's like, okay, whatever. Go for it, man. Go for it. You do you, Nick. The problem is, as we saw in the first 15 minutes of this press conference, is the audacity of Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie after the Athletic article dropped where Bo Wolf and Shea Capaldi basically said, hey, this team does not listen to scouts. It does whatever it wants. It goes rogue. The audacity of Howie to waltz out the head scout and absolutely blow the scouting department for the first 15 minutes of that press conference when we all know that it's bullshit. Like, what the hell, man? Like, how does this administration keep getting away with outright golden showering our faces and telling us that it's a spritzel?
They're obviously going to try and spritzel with us, but the logic doesn't even make sense because if they're trying to pat the scouting department on the back, then the players have to actually be good that they're drafting. But Howie's up there saying it's an inexact science to draft. I think that Weidel is their fucking boy. I think that that's their, like, he's part of the inner circle, just like Howie Roseman's part of Jeffrey Lurie's inner circle.
Oh, he's wrapped in. He's in on being the useless puppet.
I swear to God, I think he is. I'm pretty sure that Doug Pederson fucking hated him. I think that he wasn't a fan at all. And I'm pretty sure that that's like their little core four fucking Stalin's inner circle up there that are pulling the strings, making circles. And I'm afraid that Nick Sirianni is a patsy. I'm afraid that he's just, he reminds me of a.
Rhode, of course he's a patsy. Of course he is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not afraid of it. I guess that I'm afraid of the reality. But he reminds me of like a Seth MacFarlane character. He reminds me of someone you would see on Family Guy, just like a fucking like blustering, like overconfident, just like he's not even logical. But we are way ahead of the ball. And like if he wins football games, like he will be endearing. He will be like the Labrador, and I'll make t-shirts of every word he says.
Of course, because Doug Pederson was once a patsy. And then once he actually gained some self-respect and did not want to be a patsy anymore, they started breaking apart the administration. Things got shitty. They started losing, and Doug didn't want to put up with it anymore. But I swear to God, Nick Sirianni, I've never heard somebody talk way too much and in the end not say anything at all.
He just says it. The way he talks is super passionate. And he's moving around like this. And we gotta watch game tape. And he's intense like this, like he's a football guy. But you're right, he's not really saying much.
He's saying absolutely nothing. It's just nothing. It's just gibberish.
I just love it. Up
there, talk about anything, and it's not going anywhere. It's incredible.
My concern, though, is that like they're trying to do a Doug Peterson 2.0 with him, and he's like not the most popular candidate, but he's really facile with an offense. But at the same time, Doug Peterson had the luxury of having a long NFL career, and he knows what a locker room is like. And that was definitely his greatest strength, being like a locker room coach, mm-hmm. having everybody kind of galvanized in that locker room. And Nick Sirianni, like, he was a football guy, but he didn't really play in the league like that. He doesn't have that pedigree necessarily where he's going to be able to be that leader of men that Doug Peterson had been like subconsciously working on for his 10-year career or whatever.
Exactly. And I was never as wrong as anything in life as I was about Doug Peterson as a head coach. I sometimes question my own existence. Like, if I was that wrong about Doug Peterson being able to coach football, what else am I possibly wrong about? And give him credit, it was due to players loving him and wanting to go out and play for him. And that has to do with him being a backup quarterback for years in the NFL and just being a football guy. Nick Sirianni, you know, D3 Mount Union has been a part of the Colts for a while. Like, you know, is he going to get the respect of the NFL guys like Doug Peterson did? I don't know. But I remember talking to Jason Avant like in 2016 for – why was I talking to Jason Avant? Oh, we were watching a Michigan game at Fox and Hound. True story. We were at Fox and Hound in Philly, Michigan bar. My buddy is a Michigan fan. Had three seats on a four-seat table, packed Michigan, Ohio State. Just sitting there, boozing it up for the game. And Jason Avant was walking in and needed a seat at the table. He's like, hey, can I sit here? And we're like, yeah, man. Like, go ahead. Just shot the shit for like the entire first half. Awesome, dude. And
no way.
I was just like, So what do you think about Doug Peterson? You know, trying to get maybe a little bit of dirt. I don't know. You know, trying to feel it out.
A little nugget.
Uh-huh. And his exact response was, I love Doug Peterson.
That's awesome.
And it took me back because this is right when Doug was hired. I'm completely anti-Doug. I'm like, you fucking love him. This guy's a fucking moron. Like, and of course, I dismiss it as, okay, Jason Avant, you're a third string wide receiver. You had great hands, but like, what else did you do in life? But his response is just a genuine, I love Doug Peterson, says a lot for Doug. And it showed when players just went all out for him on the field, with the exception of Carson Wentz, of course, who went above the management and complained once he got benched. But the main concern I have for Nick Sirianni, other than the fact that he just might be a puppy on pixie sticks, is he really going to be able to coach this team the way he wants? Everyone says, oh, give him a chance to coach. You haven't seen him do anything. He deserves a shot. I agree 100%. But when it comes to Nick Sirianni, pick number 12, I still don't think they're going to stay at 12, but say he wants Devonta Smith at 12. And that's who he really thinks is going to help his team. And Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie, Andy, they want to go in a different direction. Do you think Nick Sirianni is really going to fight for Devontae Smith or who he wants at number 12? Or is he just going to say, oh, yes, sir, no, sir? He's not going to fucking say a word. He's not going to say a single thing. And that could come down to, like, the quarterback, quote-unquote, controversy. If Nick Sirianni genuinely thinks that, like Joe Flacco, or say they draft like a Tom Brady in the sixth round that nobody really knows about, if he really thinks like one of these guys should start over Jalen Hurts, do you think he's going to step up and say or do that, make that move, if Howie and the administration doesn't think it's acceptable at that time? Of course not. Of course not.
I think a lot of it comes down to what is Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie's reaction and perception about themselves in regards to the articles that have been written. Are they internalizing any of it and self-reflecting and being like, maybe like we shouldn't have acted like this, or maybe there's like shreds of truth to this. Because if that's the case, then maybe they give Nick Sirianni the keys to the drafts and they kind of sit back a little bit and they say, are you you can dictate this on how you see your offense or what kind of playmakers you want or how you want to build your team. Or they completely think that it's all bullshit, that they think the media is gaslighting them. They look at their shiny Super Bowl rings and they say, we know what the fuck we're doing. And they continue to strong arm the draft process in the ways that they have over the years, not listening to scouts, and they're going to do whatever the fuck they want. Like, do you think that a couple writers have made them look themselves in the mirror? Or do you think that they're just the fucking same blustering, hard-headed, egotistical guys that they always have been?
And yeah, that's what I think it is. I think Sirianni may give his input and they'll take it, they'll internalize it, but then they won't actually ever do anything with it. And Sirianni's too inexperienced to even go fight for it. So I think that nothing's going to change. I think you said it perfectly, Ron. They just think it's a couple of beat writers, you know, making a story. They're so much bigger than that. And, you know, nothing's going to slow their shit because in their minds, they think it's been a success.
You know, and I cannot wait to come back to this exact clip like a year from now. But Howie is such a manipulator, such a snake, yet such a survivor. It wouldn't surprise me if he, in fact, knows that he is basically the captain of the Titanic right now and is dictating this situation like the ship is going down, but passing off the blame and trying to make him look as good as possible for his next move already with another team.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely things in play. Like the fact that they even had that press conference yesterday made me think something was up. It made me think that one hand was doing this while another hand's going underneath the table doing something else. Because why have that press conference like the week before the draft? What is the purpose of that press conference, that cast of characters? What it has to be a reaction to that, right? Because there's not like a scheduled press conference.
It's total reaction to the hit pieces.
100%. So it's
like they're trying to show something. They're trying to like prove something. And they're trying to do a message. There is like some PR going on here, but it's like, what are they trying to show and what is that hiding? Like what's the subversive action that's going on underneath it?
It's about making Jeffrey Lurie happy right now when it comes to terms of Howie Roseman and everybody else. But I honestly think Howie knows that, okay, keep Jeffrey around just in case like shit goes south and then he can bounce to another team and say, hey, like he got way too involved. I'm the one who brought this Super Bowl here a mere 4 years ago. Let me run with this shit. Howie knows what the fuck he's doing. And I respect him for it, but I also fucking hate him.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how well Jalen Hurts does. And I'm curious how much you guys make of the comments that he's going to have to fight for his starting position. Was it just a boilerplate? Everybody competes on this team. Is Joe Flacco a legitimate threat? Or is there a chance that we're going to draft the quarterback?
That's what I think. Bingo right there. Or we make a ridiculous trade for a quarterback who is undergoing some sexual assault allegations against him. I don't think that's out of the woods yet.
The fact that they came out and wouldn't proclaim Jalen Hurts QB1 like is preposterous with Joe Flacco as the backup. I have no idea just why. Yeah, you wouldn't do that for the kid's confidence, at least. But there are many, many people who say that they're not done and they're not going to be drafting at number 12, which if I was a betting man, which I certainly am, I would bet that they make a move some way, somehow. For who? For what? I'm not sure. And be honest, I'm scared. I'm scared because no matter what they do, I don't trust.
I think that the fact that it's coming out this week, that they might be – well, and the move means that they're trying to stay put. I think that this week is like there's a bunch. It's just time for misinformation. Like they've done all their scouting. They know what they're going to do. I think they're going to stand pat at 12. And I think that it's either going to come down to who they value more. their defensive coordinator, John Gannon, who's a cornerback whisperer, a guy who's going to figure out any type of cornerback, or their head coach, Nick Sirianni, former wide receiver. I think his cornerback or wide receiver is going to be, I think, like one of four people pretty much. Mm,
and that just means they're going to overreach for a defensive tackle.
Yep. Yeah, I mean,
that's exactly what that means.
Time is a flat circle.
I would take the D tackle, the dude Christian Barmore. Oh. He's a beast though. Like if it was the best D tackle in the league, like if there was like Ndamukong Suh available this year, would you take him at 12?
But he's not Aaron Donald. He's not Ndamukong Suh. He's a very good defensive tackle who is the best player at his position in a weak defensive tackle year. There are plenty of other players you can get value wise better than him.
He could end up being Derek Barnett.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried that anyone's going to wind up being Derek Barnett. I have such PTSD that I see the negative in every single pick that we could take.
Yeah, well, that's why I just want them to just put out a Twitter. If they stay at 12, just put out a Twitter poll at 12, because whoever is the consensus vote for that pick, just take it. Just take it, because it's going to be the best player at that specific time. It just will be.
The people will know. The consensus will be. And, dude, that poll is going to say Devontae Smith.
Oh, easily.
And fine.
If he's there, get him.
Yeah.
If he's there, get him.
Like, you stop trying to outsmart yourself one time.
Yeah. Yeah, one time. Honestly, just having a core of great receivers. And I was trying to, like, fucking watch games with some of these dudes. And, like, the top cornerbacks, I mean, Surtain played with Devontae Smith. But, like, Caleb or Caleb Farley or fucking what's his name? The fucking J.C. Horn. He got dusted multiple times by Devontae Smith. Like, are you going to take – if you're watching a one-on-one – highlight of two guys who are gonna maybe be your draft pick, and one of them beats the other in the game for a fucking 78-yard touchdown, and you need both positions, why would you not take the wide receiver? Like, just let's just fucking take the wide receiver.
Because Roney was a system wide receiver and he's undersized and all this happy horse shit. That's why. Allegedly, even though he's by far probably going to be the best player at 12. Who knows? Boos! Let's get some voicemails.
Yo, Smitty and Roan. First time, long time. This is intern Steve-O. NFL draft coming up in a couple weeks, and I remember Missinelli and Richie and all of them, they always try and make the argument of who is the guy that the Eagles really need to go get. And so they obviously traded back to 12. And for me, I was wondering who you guys were thinking, but for me, I think the Eagles have to go get Patrick Surtain in this situation, the long DB from Alabama. I think they finally know and understand that they're really not too good at drafting for offense in the first round. I think they'll finally go with somebody on the defensive side of the ball. But I'm curious if you guys had to throw a dart at the wall. You know, who's the guy that the Eagles really have to go get? Love what you guys are doing with the show. Viva.
I don't hate it. If Surtain is there at 12 and they take Surtain and you get your, Lito Shepherd for the next 7 to 8 years, fine. I'm absolutely fine with that.
I mean, he said like the long Surtain, like Surtain is long. And, but like J.C. Horn is like longer. J.C. Horn is a fucking gangly bastard and he runs fast as fuck. Like he has that, like he doesn't play like Jalen Ramsey necessarily, but he has like that kind of physical, like it, that composition. And he did guard guys like Kyle Pitts. Like he would travel with Kyle Pitts and like line up over a tight end. Like he's big enough to do that shit. So like him and Surtain are like, they're kind of in the same class as me. Like one's more like physically gifted a little bit and one's more like he can kind of play in a system better. But at the same time, I think that you can get guys like that in the second round that hopefully these DB whisperers, like Eric Stokes out of Georgia or Greg Newsom from Northwestern, maybe you get one of those guys and just go with a receiver early. But I mean,
or an Eric Rowe or a Sidney Jones in the second round.
Like, oh, boy.
Yikes. Tend to work out. Well, I mean, if you have someone like Surtain, this is why I like the pick at 12. If you get him, it's almost as close to a guarantee as possible to have a starter at that position to play at the highest level for the next, you know, for at least the rookie contract for 4 to 7 years if you re-sign him. And it's like drafting a left tackle or a right tackle in the first, you know, 10 picks, unless it's Andre Dillard, who wasn't a first 10 pick. But, like, you draft someone like that, you should be good. You should be good at that position for a while. You're not taking a chance.
Would you rather have two good corners or two good receivers?
This is the old Andy Reid, early 2000s mantra. You know, receivers are more frustrating when they're awful, but you can get away and work around not having good receivers. It's not the best. You're probably not going to win Super Bowl, but you can work your way around. You can't work your way around not having good cornerbacks. Your guys are getting burned every single play. Like, that's it.
Who are the Bucs starting corners this year? But you know who their receivers were.
But I could also name you the entire fucking front seven of the Bucs that just absolutely shut down Mahomes and everybody else.
So why not build out the front seven then? Why not get the receiver and build out the front seven? Like, you need
You're talking about somebody who had fucking Tom Brady at quarterback too, not Jalen Hurts or Bobby Hoying or Bumaliciousness, whoever the Eagles are fucking going to probably put out there. Like, that's not a good correlation.
So when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, did they have a better receiving core or cornerback core? It's receivers.
I don't know about that. Are you including Zach Ertz as a receiver?
No, I'm saying wide receivers.
Because they had Jeffrey and Aguilar, who had exceptional playoff runs, better Super Bowls, versus who were their cornerbacks? Mills, who played pretty damn well that playoff run. Darby.
And Ronald Darby.
I think it's close.
Because who their other receiver was Torrey Smith, old balls Torrey. Like, that's not moving the needle more than Ronald Darby.
But Alshon Jeffrey at the time is moving the needle more than any of those guys.
During the Super Bowl, yes. Even
and that whole run.
I don't think it's a apples to apples comparison between wide receivers and cornerbacks. I just don't. And if you get Surtain there in a cornerback position and just have that position taken care of, compared to, say, you get Devontae Smith and you don't have anybody to throw to him or an offense around him, like, he's going to be gone. He's not going to fulfill his potential. Like, am I making sense here, what I'm talking about that?
I know what you're saying, but, like, if he plays for – like, if he has a lengthy career, he played well with multiple quarterbacks at Alabama. And the jury's out on what's going to happen with Mac Jones, but, like, in some ways, like, he might have gotten Mac Jones – at least top 10 pick, because Mac Jones wasn't on anybody's radar. He's going to make the quarterback better. I'm not worried about a quarterback wasting him. He's going to elevate a quarterback because he gets so fucking open every play.
Hey, look, I'm going to be happy if they get Smith or Surtain at that 12th spot. But you have to understand,
Waddle or Horn or fucking.
Well, yeah, they get that, then, you know, it's par for the course. But the one thing I respected about watching Andy Reid draft throughout the years is he would just draft based on both need and sustainability throughout the years. He would draft, I mean, John Runyon was a free agent, but guys like Trey Thomas, Lito Shepard, Sheldon Brown, Jeremiah Trotter was Ray Rhodes. But, like, these guys you can put in there and they can be there starting productive for the next decade. And if you get half the team like that through your draft, the holes are going to be easier to fill otherwise. And I'm just saying, between Surtain and Smith, a cornerback who is projected to be that good and a wide receiver who is projected to be, you know, that good, I think the safer option long-term would be Surtain, the cornerback. Game, set, match. Hey, intern Steve. Thank you very much. He is not an intern. He's a scholarship basketball player from Boston College and basically single-handedly founded the Barstool Classic. Look it up.
Wow.
Kind of.
Thanks for the call.
The Philly Barstool Classic. Stevie's great. He's the man.
Love it.
Thanks for the call.
Yo, first time, long time. It's Carmen from Scranton calling again. I just want to call about that Eagles press conference with Howie and Nick Sirianni. Look, dude, I don't give a fuck all about Nick Sirianni and the hate towards him. I fucking love this dude's energy. Coked out Sirianni makes me want to run through a fucking brick wall every time I hear him speak. Like, that dude is all over the place, and I love it. And if you don't like it, then fuck you.
I mean, I can't disagree with him. I fucking love the energy he has. I think it's not a breath of fresh air, but almost like it, because Doug Peterson was not what Doug Peterson would be like. And I do kind of like the switch up, but again, we're not going to know how good this guy is until we actually see him in action.
Hey, we talked about it, but a new point would be, I'm not sure about you guys, but I've had coaches who acted like that growing up, and every single one of them didn't know what the fuck they were doing. They're overcompensating for the lack of everything else.
Just big energy. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it is what it is. Now, I'm not saying it's the same case for Sirianni, but from personal experience, granted, Little League through the D3 level, that's what I saw, especially at the D3 level.
It seems like he's trying to be like, it's overcompensating was the perfect word, Smitty, because it seems like he's trying to like show you how much energy he has, because it's almost like he doesn't know how much energy he has. So he's trying to prove it to you while he's like trying to prove it to himself. It seems like he's just like, yeah, like I'm really doing it, being a coach. Like just be quietly confident. I appreciate quiet confidence more. And Smitty, like if that's been your experience with other coaches, like that's going to be your experience. And if we're making fun of him like this, then like his players are going to be making fun of him. Like, you don't think that they're going to be like cracking jokes and doing impressions of him? Of course they are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting because like we said before, at least Doug Peterson was in the league. This kid was a wide receiver for a D3 ball club. Bill Belichick also went D3, but
Bill Belichick isn't rah-rah in the press conference trying to show you what he knows. He got a coaching position because he's a calculating bastard and he's a fucking football genius. We haven't seen the football genius and we haven't seen the calculating bastard yet, but I'm hopeful. It doesn't mean anything. Like Boo said, like, we're just allowed to have our off-season opinions. Like, we're allowed to chew on it.
Yep, definitely rooting for him. He is so just trying to think of the correct character. Not like Lenny from Of Mice and Men. He's not that stupid, but he's so dumb. He's likable to a point. Like, is there any correlation? Anybody we can think of that's like, oh, this guy's just a moron. He's great. Not like.
Like Lenny Dykstra or something, but no. before all the bad shit that he did.
Yeah, Lenny was a little too malicious in his ways. Just like an all shucks, like, yeah, that's just Nicky being Nicky.
But even it's like, funny.
Even like a high key balls would be like Sirianni. It's like if balls had that kind of energy, it'd just be like, it's just balls.
If I could live with Coach Balls. But at the same time, like when I look at the Eagles fans, like because I also wonder what it's like for Nick Sirianni, because I know that Philadelphia is a tough fucking place to play. And he's definitely aware of that shit. But like, I do think it's forgivable of Eagles fans to be wary. And I almost feel like we're like the fucking like book club and Jerry Maguire. We're all like the jilted ex-wives are together fucking like in their bathrobes drinking wine and like fucking reading like sad books together or some shit like that. Mm. Because like we've been hurt. We're getting out of a toxic relationship. Shit was just bad for us. So if we have our guard up and if we're picking things apart, like that's okay. We're like entitled to those emotions because of what we just went through.
Quick clarification. That wasn't a book club in Jerry Maguire. That was the Divorced Wives Club. Which is also just as accurate.
Yeah. We're the Divorced Wives Club, bro. We're just getting fresh off of a fucking spicy relationship with a great guy. You know, we miss him. We miss Doug.
Yo, what's up? First time, long time. This is Kyle from York. The question is, last podcast you guys discussed Allen Iverson versus the GOAT Embiid, who's the all-time sixer. In my book, both players absolutely, you know, just drop their nutsack on any defender they played. I want to get your take on who's your all-time starting five for the Sixers. And maybe you can stem into other of the major Philly teams. And my other question is, who is more inept, the current year Flyers defense or last year's Philly's bullpen? Both of them fucking suck. They're embarrassing to watch and make me want to jump off a bridge with a cinder block tied around my ankles. I mean, I can't fucking ice skate, but, you know, pay me $90,000 for a contract and I'll fucking play better defense. But whatever. Enjoy the show, guys. Thanks.
Yo, Smitty, so I like that Sixers question, but can we do it in just like, wow, we've like, how about like from the 90s to today? Cause like, I don't know about obviously Charles Barkley, Moses Malone, Dr. J, like those dudes are incredible, but like,
Doc and Moses would not have been on my top five from that.
How about players we've seen play though with our own eyes? I feel like
And also, you need to think of, like, what makes the best team. Would Wilt and Embiid fit on the same starting lineup? Yeah, they're both probably in the top five Sixers of all time, but we're talking starting lineups here. You got to be a coach. You got to make those decisions.
Yes, sir. So how about if we went 90s to today, I would have Ben Simmons as my point guard, Allen Iverson as my two guard, Andre Iguodala as my three.
Nice. Prime Iggy.
Prime Iggy as my three. I'm building a team here.
You might as well fucking throw George Lynch out there as three.
Why not? What's wrong with Iggy?
Nothing's wrong with Iggy, but I mean, if you're talking team player, Iggy wasn't exactly the most team guy when he was in Philly. He was the superstar. Him in Philly wasn't what he was MVP for the Warriors.
Finals champion Warriors. Yeah. I mean, but I'm trying to build I need some defense on this team right here. So Embiid definitely is my center. I don't know who my power forward is, dude. I might fucking sprinkle Ersan Ilyasova in there to get some fucking charge.
I love that.
I need a shooter out there. Where's my shooter? I'm balancing out my team.
Michael Carter Williams
taking the fucking as my power forward.
Well, I mean, you're gonna put Ilyasova over Dario, if that's the case, or even Tobias. Yeah,
I mean, it was Tobias or Ersan, and I need Ersan taking charges and sitting in the corner, fucking splashing threes. My guards aren't really shooting threes, and Iverson and Simmons. So I mean, I needed to do what I had to do, but that's my team.
If we're going all-time team, I'm going Wilt at five and Embiid as four. I don't give a fuck if they can't play together. They're finding a way to play together. Barkley, Iverson, and Simmons at the point. We're going big all the way around and just having Iverson chuck from the parking lot. If we're going 90s on, that's where it gets interesting, I guess. Barkley and Embiid, I still consider Barkley early 90s. Iverson. And then yeah, I mean, I guess you have to go Simmons, 90s on, and then you're right, that power forward position is a little tough. I go Theo Ratliff. He was a legit four that was forced to play a center position.
You're going Barkley, Ratliff, Embiid. Who's?
Oh, I forgot. I forgot. I forgot I had Barkley on there too. Okay, I wouldn't go. I don't know. Maybe throw Tony Kukoc out there during his prime.
Maybe get Tony out there. Tony could do it.
No, I really think with that team, Simmons, Iverson, Embiid, Barkley, Tobias Harris, that's a superstar team right there.
I got so I did Flyers top lineup because I'm not as much of a Sixers guy. So at the center, it's a mix between Keith Primo and Claude Giroux. At the right wing, we have Dave the Hammer Schultz, who will never take shit from anybody. We got on the left wing between John LeClair and Tim Kerr, who will go down, score you a goal, and then rent you a house in Avalon.
Then in defense, we got Chris Pronger and Kimo Tiiminen, two huge leadership guys. Pronger with the big body. And then in goal, we have the 03 Robert Esch, because he was just fucking amazing in 2003.
Bobby Esch.
Just the 03 Robert
Just 03 Robert
not,
Esch.
Not Hextall's career. Not the upstart Corey Hart.
03 Robert Esch.
A Bruce Golov talking about the universe. 03 Robert Esch. And then the question, what's worse, this year's Flyers defense, last year's Phillies bullpen? I mean, the Phillies bullpen last year was historic. The worst bullpen since 1915, which was also the Phillies. I'm hammering Phillies.
Yeah, and they were doomed from the very start. Like, they didn't even really have that high expectations going into the season. They were just fucking terrible from the jump. In the Flyers' case, like, they had such high expectations for this year, and then they started out pretty hot, and then they had a little COVID pause, and then from there, it just absolutely tanked, and they haven't been able to right the ship.
Yo, guys, it's your favorite Delco scumbag here. I see you finally realize I've been calling in with fake names for a while. But, like, I wanted to know if you guys also have realized that Danny Ainge and Howie Roseman are, like, kind of similar, you know? Like, obviously, they're complete opposites in terms of drafting. But, like, Danny Ainge is a less successful Howie Roseman. I mean, a couple years ago, people were talking about how, like, you never want to fucking make a trade with these guys. Like, they call, you got to hang up right away. And now look at them. They're fucking laughing stock. Like, people are asking for their jobs. Personally, I want both their heads on a silver platter. But, like, yeah, these two guys are, like, way more similar than I kind of think. But, like, even better for us, because, like, at least Howie Roseman got the fucking job done. But, yeah, like, you know, just wanted to know your guys' thoughts, see if you guys have realized, and maybe just wanted to hear you guys bash the Celtics a little bit. All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, Danny Ainge did win one with the big three, Garnett, Allen, and Pierce. But, yeah, I can see the similarities. And Ainge, we talked about it. Roan, you went off on him a couple episodes ago. Dude might have to hang him up.
Yeah, I mean, people ball-washed Ainge for a couple years, and he overextended his good credit that he had with everybody. He was looking like a genius until he just kind of unloaded all of his players and bet on, like, kind of three guys who have pretty kind of almost similar games, Tatum, Brown, and a little bit to a less extent, Marcus Smart. But, I mean, it's fucked up that we have to try and bring down – another team's GM by comparing him to our GM. It's like, I'm trying to bash the Celtics here, yeah, and I'm trying to affirm this comparison that we have. But at the same time, it just comes at the expense of Howie Roseman, and at least Howie did get one. But Howie is a big trader. I looked at a chart that showed how much people had traded in the draft. And Howie, I think, has 16 trade ups and 10 trades down. And there's other GMs who have, like, four trade ups, no trades. Like, some guys, like, have barely made any trades in the draft, and Howie's moving up and down, and maybe it's outsmarting himself. Maybe it's going out and getting the players that he wants, but he is like trying. I don't know. It's at least a little bit exciting.
Well, it's an overcompensation thing again. Like, yeah, he doesn't trust himself as much as he should, maybe in the right spots, and needs to do stuff for the sake of doing stuff. But when it comes to Ainge and Roseman comparing them to one another, it's not even close. Danny Ainge blows Howie Roseman out of the fucking water only because of the Markelle Fultz, Jason Tatum trade. Has there been an equal trade or move Howie Roseman has made that was that egregious or that positive for the team? You could say Wentz, but that didn't work out.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hoping this next trade. I hope that this getting the Miami pick, that maybe that's his coup. But yeah, at the same time, if we want to blow him for that trade, let's see if the Sixers win a championship with Matisse Thybulle playing defense on the wing. True. Because we traded Matisse Thybulle for Carson Edwards. So it's like, if we might have fleeced Ainge with that. If he gets to a championship before Jason Tatum does, then, like, he's your small forward. Like, that's our balancing act right there. There's different ways to kind of spin things.
In the end, everybody kind of wins besides Brian Colangelo.
What a fun new slant.
What a fucking loser. Can you imagine if he was still GM? Here, thank God that whole thing blew up. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that it is a true blessing. Or that even if Elton Brand was still GM, like Elton meant well, but at the same time, like the roster couldn't have been worse put together last year.
And speaking of the Sixers, beat up right now, coming off an 0-2 run from the Suns last night and the game before, who they lose to the game before, that the Warriors with Curry putting up 49 without Ben Simmons, without Tobias Harris. So, I mean, you can't really look much into that. If anything, it's nice to see Shake out there putting in minutes because they're going to need him. And George Hill putting in an appearance before the playoffs. Hasn't looked anything spectacular, but at least he's out there. It sucks that Tobias and Ben aren't playing right now because they got the Bucks now, and they need that number one seed. They need that number one seed, and right now the Nets are a half a game behind, and they need that number one seed, man. Like, I don't know. And Embiid's going to force himself out there to play against the Bucks. He should have had a night off last night against the Suns, and he's going to have to play because they need that number one seed.
And it's not just the number one seed. I think that Embiid is like, I think he hears some of the national media clamor that Jokic is going to run away with this MVP because Embiid hasn't played enough games. Mm-hmm. And he's like, fuck that. And honestly, I'm almost like, fuck that. Because at the end of the day, as much as I want him to win the MVP, the last thing I want is an already hurt Embiid going out when he shouldn't be playing on the second half of a two game of a back to back. Like, he shouldn't be playing in that game if he's still recovering from an injury and mm-hmm. he's forcing himself into the lineup so he can be part of this MVP conversation. They lost the game to the Suns anyway. I would have rather than take the night off, just get well, make sure that you're there for the playoffs because he's still playing at that really high level, even though he has been hurt. But the last fucking thing we need is for him to get another inch. That's the last fucking thing we need is for him to make this shit worse while he's just trying to force himself into a conversation that he's unfairly being excluded from because of some bullshit by the media.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation. Yes, they could have won the Golden State game without Simmons and Harris. They would have won if they had one of the two of them. But I can see Embiid playing that one last night. The Suns are good, man. Suns are really good. They would have been lucky to come out with a win last night with or without Embiid. And they still almost did. But I agree with you. I think a rest last night going into the Bucks would have been advantageous. But they need that number one seed, man. That for this reason, above anything else, like playing the Celtics in the second round, who are now a five seed and playing well, or the Knicks, who are playing really well. That's still a lot better than playing the Nets or the Bucks in the second round. A lot better.
Yeah, no, you're right. And another player that I've liked has been Tyrese Maxey. He gave us a little bit of offense in that Golden State game. He's driving a little bit. He's getting that floater out there. And Doc showing that confidence to give him some minutes. So kudos to Tyrese.
Yeah, I'm still not in the position to be able to trust him in the clutch time come playoffs. But if he's out there and performing like the way he can, like I'm fine with him being out there. He's not going to be a detriment to the team as much as he could have been, in my opinion. Phillies are again what we thought they were, 500 team. Didi's banged up. Segura, who was hot, banged up. Archie Bradley, huge bullpen signings, banged up. Their pitching is drive me up the fucking wall solely because they are doing the stupidest things in non-stupid moments. Zach Wheeler, 0-2 pitch the other day in the fifth inning, 500 feet. Another guy at the bullpen last night, 0-2 pitch, 500 feet. Like, it drives as a baseball, it's like pure, just fucking throw it. Don't even come close to reaching the plate. Throw it 5 feet in front of the plate rather than smooth it right down the cock to a major league professional fucking hitter. And you know who is a major league professional fucking hitter? Bryce Harper. That guy is hotter than the Sun's taint right now. And then some.
Yeah.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but every night He's going like 3 for 3, and he's mixing in bombs. He's playing at an MVP level, and without him, they're not 8-8 or 9-9, whatever they are. They're like 3 to 4 games under 500 as of now.
Yeah, dude, I said it. I think it was last week, maybe the week before. I was like, Bryce, put the team on your back, dude. We need you to put the team on your back. And he's literally putting the team on his back. It's fucking awesome to watch. Like yesterday, like he single-handedly won that game. He single-handedly got us the lead. They gave up the lead. And he said, I'm getting the fucking lead back. And he fucking dragged us to victory. I love it. I like the depth at our in our middle infield. Didn't really know we had that. But the boys were hitting a little bit yesterday.
I'll tell you what, Nick Maton is going to accidentally become a Major League Baseball player.
And Brad Miller, too. Brad Miller looked really good yesterday, too.
Hey, Brad Miller, he's a bench guy. He's good for a spot start. But Nick Maton wasn't supposed to be anything, and he's coming up. He's making diving stops at short. He's providing a little punch at the bat. Kudos to Mickey Moniak for finally, like, existing after going 0 for 12 with 8 strikeouts. He's getting the bat on the ball a little bit. He's hitting a dinger yesterday. Good on him because they need him. But I mean, the Phillies, they are what they are. And if they're beat up, they're worse than that. Which
if there's any big positives though, Aaron Nola looks like a bona fide fucking ace.
He does, and I was surprised by this stat. I think it was the past 3 years or 4 years, nobody's thrown more innings than Aaron Nola, wow. Which is like shocking, especially since that was his first 9-inning complete game. And yeah, he looked like a stud. He looked like an absolute stud. He's a Cole Hamels ace. He doesn't look like that overpowering ace, but he's an ace. Now you just need Zach Wheeler to perform like the fucking ace he should be, because he does have ace stuff. And Eflin is doing what he needs to do. And number three, Chase Anderson, nice spot. Fifth starter the other day, went, you know, a good 5 innings, did what he had to do. Matt Moore stinks. Vinny Velasquez is pitching on Friday, which is going to be an absolute disaster.
Hold on to your horses, ladies and gentlemen.
Good God. What's the over under of that game at Coors? 30?
Might be.
Hammer it. Yeah, fuck. Good call. Good call. Hammer it. Yeah, Barstool Sportsbook. For sure.
Other than that, long season. Just they are what they are.
I think if some of these young players like that they need like the infusion at like the back of their lineup. They need the infusion at the back of their rotation. Like they need the like if there's young players who can give you that spark, guys who you didn't count on, because the guys who you count on are kind of doing it. They are who you thought they were. And then the guys at the back of the rotation are who you thought they were. So if we slide someone through there who isn't who we thought they were, that fucking can bubble up or give us a little bit of juice, that's what we need. That's what's going to take the Phillies from this 500 team they are to maybe being a couple games over 500. Maybe you're in that wild card race.
Exactly.
And hopefully it's a long summer.
Exactly. And Dombrowski could make that move. One thing, though, living around Philly again, Philly Sports Talk Radio, whew. They're giving Joe Girardi the business right now. They're not liking Joe, whether it's acceptable or not. They're not liking Joe. I don't think it's to that point yet. I wasn't necessarily a Gabe Kapler hater, but I didn't think he was the greatest. I was on the fence of keep Gabe Kapler unless you know you can get someone better, and I think Joe Girardi is better,
much better.
But, uh-huh. I mean, Kapler's doing okay in San Fran with that lineup full of absolute bum. Evan Longoria is 35 years old. He's batting in the three hole.
Jesus hey, Christ.
What's going on over there? All right. That's the Phillies.
That's the Phillies. Though. There's reasons for hope. I mean, Scott Kingery is not one of them. Scott Kingery is, I don't know if what you close the book on him.
No, I mean, he shouldn't be up. He should be getting his at-bats, but he needs to be up because they need him. And it is what it is.
Will we see Odubel?
Surprised they didn't bring up Odubel over Moniak because you needed someone to play and perform now. But, I mean, if you're not going to do that over Moniak, then what the fuck is the point of just keeping him in the alternate league or whatever, soaking up other people's at-bats? I don't get it. Gentlemen, new segment. I did not warn you about, but we got a nice little Delco minute for the boys. Uh-oh. Right here, Uh-oh. Right now. I'm okay. not sure. We got three topics of conversation in this Delco minute. Number one, did we catch the premiere episode of Mayor of Easttown with Kate Winslet on HBO?
Dude, I did not, but I've heard great things about it. I think I got – is this going to be a Mayor of Easttown review show? Because if so, I'm in.
I think it could be. I think it could be. A lot of talk was given to the show solely because Kate Winslet, who is an Academy Award-winning actress, one of the best out there, stated on the record that the Delco accent was the hardest accent she ever had to perform.
So my dad saw it, and he asked me about it, and I said I hadn't seen it, and he goes, yeah, her fucking accent sucks.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not good. You can tell. You can tell. The first episode, you can tell it's going to be at least a captivating series. It's, you know, it's got good acting between Winslet and Guy Pearce, and Roy from The Office is in there. You know, it keeps your attention. It's a big character building first episode. But I'll tell you what, I mean, they dropped the references in there. We had every sort of name drop from the book, from Wawa to Westchester to Ridley to getting stitched up a riddle. Like, every little reference was just like, oh yeah, I'm from Delco. I know what I'm talking about.
I honestly fucking hate when movies do that. Either get the accent right on the fucking nose, or don't try and overcompensate for the lack of accent with a bunch of references, because they did that shit in Silver Linings Playbook too, mm-hmm. with a corny ass fucking script, a corny ass accent, and fucking over the top references where it was just like, what am I even fucking watching? I hated Silver Linings Playbook. That movie fucking sucks.
Okay, I wouldn't go that far. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, but the Lanark Diner is awesome.
It absolutely sucks. Hang on. Let me get here. Keep going.
So first of all, Silver Linings Playbook is one of the very few bright spots we have in the national and worldwide audience that we can represent here in Philadelphia. I didn't say it was the greatest thing ever, but, you know, Bobby De Niro ripping off the DeSean Jackson jersey, calling his son a fucking loser, you know, that hits pretty home to some people who grow up around these parts.
Well, then get a good actor. Why is it that in every fucking
Bobby De Niro and Kate Winslet?
Stop, dude. Every single Boston movie has like the most compelling accent, because the accent is easy to do, the Boston accent.
That's because they have fucking Matt Damon and Casey Affleck doing the Boston accent.
Why don't
from
we?
Boston.
Exactly.
But we can't get Bradley Cooper in for every single Philly movie.
But his Philly accent isn't even that fucking crazy.
No, I think it's a mainline accent.
Philly needs more respect in the acting world. We need to be showing our own movies with the cloth being people who are from fucking Philadelphia. But like, we need to be making our own shit. Fuck that, dude. I'm tired of this fetishization of Boston in movies. We should start fucking fetishizing Philadelphia, and people who are from here should be the ones who are getting it done here.
Okay, well, M. Night Shyamalan still whips out a movie every year. But
That's true.
One final word on the Mayor of Easttown before we go on to that movie-making local route. We watched, the wife and I watched, like, a little behind-the-scenes afterwards. And, of course, the writer and director is from the area at, like, Chester County, Delco border. And his description of the area couldn't be more accurate, but just, like, what's the word? Despondent. We're full of despair of like what it's like growing up around here, which like is to the point I don't even think it was fair. He said, like, you know, the people around these parts we're trying to represent are born here, they die here, and they just live because they have to.
Like, you can't leave Delco, and you must just exist in Delco.
Exactly. You go on with your life because you have no other choice. It's like, yeah, I kind of see that, but it's like, growing up around here, it's not that bad. And speaking of which, there's this other movie written by a local fellow called Last Call, with Jeremy Piven, Jamie Kennedy's in it, Sherry O'Terry.
Takes place in Upper Darby, right?
Takes place in Upper Darby, and I don't want to, like, talk bad about it, but it's...
Weren't the directors? I think the directors were like a group of friends.
Yeah.
That like it was just like the area.
It was like a bro movie to like show your friends at Delco, and somehow
they got Jeremy Piven.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't even a representation of like of the area, like the references, like I think like we're a stretch. Rowan, the base of the movie is Jeremy Piven's this Upper Darby kid who leaves, goes to LA, essentially becomes like a real estate agent or some big shot or some shit, comes back when his mom dies, and he's trying to go around to get signatures for a local casino in Upper Darby, and he like goes around the neighborhood and like tries to just like become one with the people again. And I hate to say it because I don't want like we're getting back to like the director or people around it, but it just was a struggle.
It sucked. Okay, you can say that movie sucked. I can say Silver Lining Playbook sucked. I mean, I don't mind saying a movie sucks. And sometimes it's not the people who wrote its fault. Sometimes you cast people like, I mean, I know Jamie Kennedy's from Upper Darby, but like you cast Jeremy Piven to try and play somebody from Philadelphia, and it's like, yeah, it might not work out exactly right because like they're probably going for something pretty specific. But if you're saying that the references weren't even on point, you got to sprinkle the references correctly.
It was just like the bar that they're trying to like base everything around of, or it was like in the back room of a house, and I'm like, I never been to like a house bar in like Upper Darby or Delco or I don't know. Maybe it's how it was in like the 80s. I don't know. I felt bad because it was like a forced watch after a while, and I wanted to like give it like a really positive review, but it was good. But Mare of Easttown, get on it.
Start giving me homework. I'll fucking watch the movies along with you. I think it's on HBO, I think.
HBO.
But if we want to go through Philly movie by Philly movie, I'll watch a Philly movie a week and fucking
I'm in.
We could talk about it on here. Dude, for sure.
There are a lot of underground movies that were based on or shot around Philadelphia that like people don't know about, like Fallen with Denzel Washington and John Goodman. That is a great movie. A great movie, and that was shot and based in Philadelphia. 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis. That was all around. I mean, obviously you got the Shyamalan of Ding Dongs, but we can do that. The garbage pick if you'll go kicking.
Law Abiding Citizen with Gerard Butler.
Yep.
And Jamie Foxx.
So first they put us in movies. Now we're starting to get people from Philly that write movies and shows. The next step, we're just one step away of having our little fucking Matt Damon Goodwill Hunting Boston situation. We just need to get the stars in there. We just need to get some local Philadelphia actors in there, and then we'll be fucking golden. That's all we need, Smitty. Smitty, let's get you as a star of a movie.
And the talent.
Let's get you.
I feel like Smitty could play Sirianni in a movie.
Let's go, Smitty. Let's write the Sirianni movie now.
Sure.
Let's write it live. Sure. Have it done by like the end of the off season.
True story. I was cast for a Philadelphia-based movie. It had been like 3-4 years ago. It was ditched because it was a Harvey. Well, what was told to me, it was a Harvey Weinstein production, and they absolutely just threw it out like after a while. But we filmed like a couple scenes for it, and I was like. Like a Philly trash bag. And I'll tell you what, even though I just basically had to act like myself, I can't act. I couldn't do it.
You can't do it?
I couldn't. Well, because it was weird because I can, like, you give me a line, I could say it to you right here, right now. But what I couldn't do is when, like, the other person was speaking, like, I didn't know how to look, how to act, even though I'm, like, right next to him. So I'm like, it was kind of like a Will Smith and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air situation where like, I know their lines and I was kind of like not
anticipating, like
them, but anticipating. And it looked awkward. I can't act.
Damn. Yeah. What the fuck? We'll work on it in time for the Nick Sirianni story because he's not the most natural guy either. So maybe your lack of acting, maybe you'll wind up looking exactly like Sirianni.
Exactly.
Whatever works. One final Delco note. I would formally like to announce that I'm joining a Delco softball league this summer.
Let's go.
Shut up.
Yeah. Which
document the journey, dude. You have to document the journey.
We're working on it. We'll figure it out. Maybe I just kind of want to feel it out first. See, like, what exactly we document. I wanted to talk to you about it real quick to see, like, what's the best angle on everything, because these guys are the definition of wild cards. So yeah. So something's gonna happen in terms of footage. It's just a matter of what.
I think that Barstool Delco could be its own thing. I think that there's so much. I mean, like, I think that there's a lot going on in Delco. Delco is basically, to me, it's like the Twin Cities. It's like Philadelphia and Delco, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Dallas, Fort Worth. It's just paired off right there. And I think that Delco is fertile for content. I think that you could broadcast as much or as little of it as you wanted to. I think it would play on TikTok for sure. I think you could do individual player profiles on TikTok and shit like that.
That's why I wanted to talk to you. Roan's the brainchild. He knows exactly how to do this. That's a phenomenal idea right there.
That would definitely play. I think that you
get could the do start, like, get graphics of the starting lineup cards. Just put them on baseball cards.
That would be incredible. Or like, I mean, I don't know how their playoff series is set up. But get some kind of, like, I don't know, Hard Knocks.
Basically, I want to go. I talked to a couple of the guys. They're Delco. They're Delco hardest. Like, they are what they are, which I love. I want to go in. I want to see, like, everybody in their natural habitat first before we start putting the camera in their face.
Oh, go do a little recon, you know, do a little undercover Delco.
We're excited.
Hide a GoPro. You got to hide a GoPro, like, right here, and then just document everything.
Booze knows. Booze, you in for another Hard Knocks?
Let's fucking do it.
Yeah, let's do it. And even better, just go post-game to the Barnabees in Ashton, have ourselves a night, and stay there till the next morning when the funeral party is there at the same location. So
brilliant. Perfect. Brilliant. Yeah. That's a fucking reference. That's something that they should be writing in the fucking mayor of Easttown.
Pretty much. Yeah. you walk into the funeral party with at Barnaby's and Ashton, you walk out with an ashtray with the deceased's name and
on it. And your grass stains on your softball pants.
Pretty much. All right. That wraps her up this time. First time, long time. Thanks everybody very much. 5-star sub. We're unsanctioned per usual. Give us love. You want to see us do more. Wants to see Roan out there umping on the Delco Softball League. This baby needs to be picked up. This baby needs to be picked up so we can get the resources, so we get Booze down there. Because right now, we started this podcast at 7 a.m. in the morning. We're doing it at 10 p.m. at night. Like, that's the only times we are able to do it until this shit gets more legs and we're able to get more Barstool resources in on it. So please, get it out there. Get it moving. We'll hang up and listen.